so glad to be back. I've been away for 2 weeks. 2 weeks, yes. And we have two new faces tonight. Except yours is familiar a little bit. Have we met?
Once before, at Misha's group, which is
where oh, there we are.
Guest teacher, a couple of humans ago.
Yes, yes, welcome. And
hello, everybody. My name is Andy, and I saw this on the meetup group, and just wanted to come and visit, partake.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Let's do introductions around.
I'm Ellie.
Jeffrey.
Judy.
Bill.
Wendy.
Andy.
Samia.
Paul.
Jennifer.
Kyle.
Angie. We're just about to start a new subject. A very famous, it's not a sutra exactly, and it's not exactly a poem. It's, you could say, a slice of deep wisdom that takes a lot of sitting with. You can't really study it very well, but you can be with it in time and let it cook inside in ways that become new kinds of information. It's called the Sandokai, and this is a book by Shunryu Suzuki, the one who wrote Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, and he gave a series of talks, and somebody wrote them all down, and we've inherited it. So it's very short, really. This gives the Japanese version of it, or the Chinese version, probably. No, that's Japanese. Chikudo Daisen no Shin Tozai Mitsuni Aifusu. They do that at Zen San Francisco Zen Center. They often do that instead of the Heart Sutra, either in Japanese or in English. In English, it's just these two little pages. And one of the things that people do for a practice period, when you pick something that you want to deepen your practice and do a little more discipline, choose to memorize this. So I hope you all get a chance to look at this book, because Suzuki Roshi has some wonderful things to say, not only about this, but about our practice altogether. And Sekito, or I've forgotten his Chinese name. He has three names, because there are two names from China depending on who translated into English, and one kind of Japanese name. That's one of the very complicated things about what we inherit from the deep past, that the translations come from different authors, English speaking or French or German, and then they have their own way of casting it, and it can be confusing. So this fellow is called in China, in most authoritative books you could say, is Dongshan Lingji. Also in Japanese, he's Sekito Kisen. Same guy, just a completely different name. And there's another name that starts with a C that's also his name, but I didn't have time to look it up. It's not so important. Names are just noises that we make to identify each other. So as long as we know. I put together a page of stories about him. It's not information. We don't have any information, but we have stories. And they're very famous stories, and they're very telling for our practice. So I'll pass this out, but I want to read the harmony of difference and equality. Difference and equality. The harmony of difference and equality. The mind of the great sage of India. Who is that?
Buddha.
Yeah. The great sage of India is intimately transmitted from west to east. While human faculties are sharp or dull, the way has no northern or southern ancestors. The spiritual source shines clear in the light. The branching streams flow on in the dark. Grasping at things is surely delusion. According with sameness is still not enlightenment. All the objects of the senses interact and yet do not. Interacting brings involvement. Otherwise, each keeps its place. Sights vary in quality and form. Sounds differ as pleasing or harsh. Refined and common speech come together in the dark. Clear and murky phrases are distinguished in the light. The four elements return to their natures, just as a child turns to its mother. Fire heats, wind moves, water wets, earth is solid. Nose and smell, tongue and taste. Thus, for each and everything, depending on these roots, the leaves spread forth. Trunk and branches share the essence. Revered and common, each has its speech. In the light, there is darkness, but don't take it as darkness. In the dark, there is light, but don't see it as light. Light and dark oppose one another, like front and back foot in walking. Each of the myriad things has its merit, expressed according to function and place. Phenomena exist like box and lid joining. Principle accords like arrow points meeting. Hearing the words, understand the meaning. Don't set up standards of your own. If you don't understand the way right before you, how will you know the path as you walk? Practice is not a matter of far or near. But if you are confused, mountains and rivers block your way. I respectfully urge you who study the mystery, don't pass your days and nights in vain. So you can see he's bringing up both sides in every way. It's the both side characteristic of our brain that is so trying and so distracting and helps us misunderstand a great deal of what we are trying to understand. As long as we cling to one side or another, it becomes a problem for us. So I'll pass this out, and you'll see what an interesting fellow he was. He was the founder of our school of the Soto Zen. He's the one who asked a question that couldn't be answered, very much like Dogen asked a question that couldn't be answered. Dogen's question is, if everybody has Buddha nature, why do we have to practice? Why not just sit around and be Buddha all the time? And he came back to Japan to say, all beings are Buddha nature. Not having or getting, it's already. So Dongshan's first question when he was a little boy, he heard somebody chanting the Heart Sutra, saying no eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no color, no sound, no smell, no taste, no touch, no object of mind, no realm of eyes, and so forth, until no realm of mind consciousness, etc., etc. And he said, but I have a nose, I have eyes, what does that mean? And the person he asked said, you should go and study, and sent him to a teacher. And that person said, I can't be your teacher. You're already asking a question that's unanswerable. So he went and took the precepts on a mountain with a temple, and then went to see all kinds of various teachers and met Guishan, who was a very famous teacher. And Guishan sent him to Yunyan. And Yunyan became Dongshan's teacher. And they had a continual kind of dialogue between each other, walking around the mystery, you could say. And Dongshan was always doubtful and always pressing his teacher, yes, but, what about this? So one of them was, Dongshan asked his teacher, who can hear the teaching of the inanimate? Because that's a famous declaration in Zen, that the inanimate is teaching. There's a poem about Buddha's long tongue being the sound of a little stream over a waterfall. That's the sound of the speaking of the stream. And Yunyuan said, the inanimate can hear it. He asked Yunyuan, where does it say that inanimate things proclaim the Dharma? And Yunyuan said, in the Amitabha Sutra, it says, the lakes and rivers, the birds, the forest, they all chant Buddha, they all chant Dharma. And this was Dongshan's first awakening. So then he asked about more things that he needed to know, and Yunyuan said, well, what were you doing before we were doing this? And Dongshan said, I wasn't practicing the Noble Truths. And his teacher said, were you joyous in non-practice? And Dongshan said, it wasn't without joy. It's like sweeping shit into a pile and picking out a jewel in it. So then he asked, what should I do when I want to see my true being? If this is Buddha nature itself, what am I supposed to do? And Yunyuan said, ask the messenger within. And Dongshan said, I'm asking now. meaning he meant his teacher. No. Tell me. And Yun Gan said, what does he tell you? So Dongshan left and started to wander again. And as they departed, Yun Gan said, it'll be hard to see each other again. You're going off, you're young. And Yun Gan said, it will be difficult not to see each other. Once we connect, we never disconnect. So Dongshan asked as he left, if someone asks me to describe your truth, how can I reply? And after a long pause, Yun Gan said, and this is one of the most famous statements in Zen that goes back to 850 or so. Just this is it. And Dongshan sighed. He still didn't get it. Yun Gan said, now you've taken this on, understand and consider it very carefully. Don't just let it go. But he was still in doubt, and he was crossing over a little stream, and he stopped and he looked into the water and saw his own reflection. And later he wrote this poem. Avoid seeking elsewhere, for that's far from the self. Now I go alone, everywhere I meet it. Now it's exactly me. Now I'm not it. It must be understood like this, to merge with being as is. This is what is known in Zen as a koan, and people suffer over this greatly for a long time sometimes. What does that mean? How can that be? He wrote two very, very beautiful things. One is the Sandokai, and the other is the Hokyo Zamai, or the Precious Mirror Samadhi, which describes sitting practice in these kinds of terms. In that one, it says, like looking in a precious mirror in which you see your own reflection. You are not what it is. It is what you are. It's the same koan. And in some sense, it's the essence of Zen practice, of actually just meditation experience. As we sit, the divergence of our mind, divergences, the red and the white and the black and the blue and the up and the down, begin to drop away. Or maybe they don't drop away so much as are joined or merged in the way that Seki Cho did in his poem. That there is a way of seeing and being in the world in which everything is just as it is, and yet it's not the way we think it is. And it's not quite, we're not quite what we think we are. So that as things approach and encounter, our encounter can be different ways of being in the world. we can encounter by trying to get things and hold on to them and make them more real and more solid than they actually are, because nothing is real and solid. Or we can allow them and see how it all fits, that there's not just one foot, there are 2 feet. It's like each foot follows and each foot has its way. Or like a box with its lid. It fits. One thing fits. So that we don't have to suffer the sense of separation that we do in always trying to figure everything out as separate things. We can see both sides. We do see both sides when we sit, when we stop trying to think so hard, because it's the thinking that's this intellect that's trying so hard to make everything make sense of everything, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work to penetrate through to the wholeness of things, the whole truth of everything. And that's what Sekito was, Dongshan was pressing his teacher about. Yes, but, and the teacher said, well, it's rocks and trees and flowers and birds. And Dongshan said, yes, but they all chant the Dharma. That's the truth of it. If we want to hear the truth, we hear the truth in the very most present moment. There isn't any other. So this is a wonderful study. And Suzuki Roshi has wonderful things to say about it. That we can begin next week to approach. And if you can, I suggest you read the first chapter, which is just a few pages. And we can talk about it the way we did with Uchiyama Roshi and pass our way through it, or walk our way through it, or pray our way through it, or something. I don't know.
Hold your nose and jump into it.
Hold your nose and jump in, right. Exactly, Paul. Are there questions? Suggestions? Samia?
Does the teacher usually know where the student is by their questions?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like in school, you could tell if somebody did their homework.
Yes.
And it's like...
It's not quite the same.
No. How exposed are we here?
It talks about most intimate, doesn't it? It's pretty exposed. Which is
and it's pretty guaranteed. The longer you sit, the more you see, or kind of...
Well, Koban always said nothing is promised. Mm-hmm. So if you sit thinking that there's some kind of promise of something, you'll be making a big mistake. You'll just make yourself crazy. Oh, where is it? Maybe this is it. Like a little mouse running around, sniffing in corners. It doesn't work. The best way is to let the mind rest on the breath and see what happens.
Well, I mean, it seems to kind of work as a shame. So
it does.
It's, in a way, it's a proof.
Yes. Yes,
so
which is why
we assume that?
No, some people really suffer at Sashin because
they
assume that.
I see. painful if you have expectations, I guess.
It's torture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that's why, it is why we sit sesshin, why we sit for a week at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Long, long sits. Because the longer we allow ourselves to disengage from trying to figure everything out and trying to make things our way and just begin to see how things actually are. It takes 3 days just to get enough comfortable to be able to begin to sit that way. But then as you sit longer, it becomes more possible. As long as you don't cling to anything and hope it turns into something that makes the great me more important or happier or anything, because there isn't anybody like that to actually have it happen. It's just you. That's a good question.
I just thought I'd share a reflection of 30-some years ago. And that was, the Sandokai was considered really the go-to document. It was what every Zen monk at Shasta would talk about all the time. And they were always utilizing the couplets to... when somebody would ask a question.
Huh.
I probably have more reflections on the Sandokai than I have of any other document.
Oh, that's interesting.
And of course, it wasn't chanted so much as sung. So when I,
oh,
when I go
yes.
hear it, I'm hearing
the
hear it.
Singing.
I'll
yes.
hear it being sung. So.
Yes, Kenneth Roshi was a musician, and she composed hymns, actually, Soto Zen hymns.
Sort of like Gregorian chant.
Yes. So I once visited Pureg before I knew anything about Pureg in Austria, and Koban was doing a sesshin there, and one of the many new things that happened was that they, in the Zendo, lined up in a snake-like form around the altar and then chanted the Sandokai over and over very fast while they walked.
Wow.
It was...
in Japanese or in English or in German?
You know, I was so bewildered, I'm not sure. it was a long time ago, but yeah, I couldn't keep up, whatever it was. I had the book and was trying to read it, so it may have been in German. But that's a practice, and I think they do that in San Francisco. But Kenneth Roshi always had her own way.
Mm-hmm.
She, at Shasta, she had her own little wonderful ways.
Maybe you could sing it for us one time.
Hmm?
Could
you? You could sing it for us one time.
Well, maybe I will.
Oh, Jeffrey, that would be wonderful.
Maybe when we're finished with this. Sure.
As a finale?
Yes, as a
finale. The grand finale.
Not too much pressure.
Well, he's... a theatrical fellow, so he can handle it.
If you mean talking to third graders.
Yes, right. The way you do. Bill?
Does this relate to letting go?
Yes.
And in a way other than letting
Yes. Yeah.
Is that something you say a few words about?
It's something we can't make happen, but it's something we can put ourselves in the way of. It's why we bow so many times over and over. We bow to each other. We bow to our cushion. We're giving up to everything in that way. We're acknowledging that we're just a little bit of a piece of everything that we're totally connected to. And everything is what we depend on. It's very hard to talk about, because it's easier just to make the gesture. Oh, I see. Oh, I'm grateful. Oh, that's what we are. Beauty helps in the beginning. Beauty is a very big helper. It's something we respond to.
Like the beauty of the mountains.
Yes, yes. At Chikoji last week during Sesshin, the cherry tree was unbelievable. It's a very large old cherry tree, and it just was almost as big as this room. Filled with bees, the branches disappeared in the blossoms. There were so many. And it was a huge help. But if you've been sitting longer, then often when you walk out of the zendo, just the light on a blade of grass will be enough. And after you've been sitting for years and years, it's just a natural part of your recognition. And
you know the blossoms will fall, you know, light will change.
That's part of the beauty.
It's no good being attached to
you. Yes, exactly. Yeah, you can't be. On the other hand, the blossoms will come back next year, which is remarkable. And it's a good sign for the rest of us. We're not lost. We start over and over. Yeah. It's 8:00, and I have something else to share with you. Oh, I brought too much, but Tassajara, as usual, will be opening itself to students who want to come to practice for a few days or a week or a month in the summertime. Some teachers take their whole group to Tassajara for a week or so, and I have never done that, and I couldn't do it now. I can't handle Tassajara very well. But I encourage any of you who would be interested, you work in the morning. They put you to work in the kitchen, teach you how to do Zen cooking, and it's cooking for the guests, so you get to cook a lot of la-di-da food that's really good and get to eat it after. And then in the afternoon, you're free. Free to hike in the mountains, in the Santa Lucia Mountains, or sit in a hot tub, or sleep, or whatever. So I encourage you to taste it if you're interested. It says, and I'll leave this out, that there's going to be further information. But it gives... I thought it gave a website. I think if you look up Tassajara, you will see what they, what it is. And there'll be more. I think it starts in May and goes through till the end of August or maybe September. So think about it. It's an experience. So we do a 1 minute sit before we chant the Bodhisattva vows.